Today we're planning to have a sermon from Mr. Armstrong. We're planning to have a sermon from Mr. Armstrong on Mark of the Beast. It was given back in December 1982, and the last time we played it, I think it was 2003. Now, from 82 till the present day, an awful lot has happened in the world that bears a great deal on the subject of the Mark of the Beast. And even from 2003 till now, a great deal has happened regarding the Mark of the Beast. So if we just turn over in the sermonette, just a few minutes I've got, if we turn over to Revelation 13, and we'll stick in Revelation 13, and just have a look at some of the items that are mentioned here regarding the Mark of the Beast, and go through some of the news items that have appeared very recently, literally in the last week, literally today, quite frankly. And I hope that in doing so, it'll help us when we're listening to what Mr. Armstrong had to say at that time back in 82. It'll help us to really understand just how applicable it is to today's situation and why today's situation is so vital that we do get our heads around it. But here in Revelation 13, verse 16, it talks about the mark of the beast, and it talks about this beast coming up out of the earth that had two horns like a lamb and spoke as a dragon in verse 11. But over in verse 16 it says, "And he causes all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and bond, to receive a mark in their right hand or in their forehead." So there is the mark that is going to be discussed by Mr. Armstrong. Now there are certain things we need to notice about this particular mark, and that is that is applicable to what we've got today. And the three areas I've highlighted is the fact that it is a fascist style, and that is actually expressed here. It's very much a dictatorial style. Secondly, it involves the control of money, because nobody will buy or sell. And thirdly, it's led by a religious leader. So those three are the three areas I want to go into. The first of all, in verse 15, where it talks about, "And he had power to give life to the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak and cause," notice, "and cause that as many as would not worship the image of the beast should be killed." In other words, it's a dictatorial fascist style that is in fact coming. And what we need to understand is that the Europe that we've got today is not the Europe that is going to be the beast power. It is certainly laying the groundwork for the Europe that's going to be the beast power, but the Europe that is coming is different. As it says in this particular article from the 15th, from EuropeanVoice.com, it says that on the 15th of this month, he said, "Angela Merkel, Germany's chancellor, has called for political union in Europe as a response to the Eurozone sovereignty debt crisis. Speaking at a congress of a Christian Democratic Union party in Leipzig yesterday, Merkel said that the task of our generation is to complete economic and monetary union and build political union in Europe step by step." So it is very much a political union that they're looking for. And when you look at what in fact has happened in the case of Italy and also in the case of Greece, you're looking at unelected technocrats that are then being put in charge. So it is not democracy. It is something which is much nearer the fascist style that we will find eventually, as it is described in verse 15. It says, "That does not mean less Europe. It means more Europe," Merkel said. Now, one thing that Mr. Armstrong will be mentioning in the sermon that we'll hear today is the United States of Europe. Now remember, it wasn't a United States of Europe, it wasn't an EU, it was the EEC, the European Economic Community, and that's all it was at that particular time. And yet, when we look at the Express article, that's from the 24th, what's the 24th, what are we today? It's literally last week anyway, basically. It says, Strasbourg, France, it says, "The leaders of France and Germany called for a United States of Europe today, as they agreed to further integrate the troubled 17-nation Eurozone. Nicolas Sarkozy called for the European Central Bank to play a bigger role in solving the debt crisis and agreed with Angela Merkel that the Eurozone should further integrate." And he goes on to say, Merkel said that the treaty changes, and they're talking about making changes in the actual treaty itself, would, quote, "make clear that we must take step towards a fiscal union to express the conviction that we know policies must be more closely coordinated if you have a common stable currency. It is political confidence in Europe that has been lost, And we can only win it back politically, Merkel said. So it is the political face of Europe that is changing. And this, you know, it may look as if it's economic, but in fact it's not. It's the political face of Europe that's changing. And what it's changing into, which people do not understand, is here in verse 15, that it is given as far as the political, where the cause as many as would not worship the image of the beast. In other words, that does not agree with the European idea, is going to be actually executed. Now the other area, if you notice in verse 16, where he causes small and great, rich and poor, free and bond, to receive a mark in the right hand and in the forehead, the reason for that being so important is that it is that, and no man may buy or sell, say he has that mark, or the name of the beast, or the number of his name. So it is the buying and selling, and the control of money, and the fact that it is a financial crisis that is happening at the moment, is enormously significant. Now, what is going to happen in the next few? They're talking about more Europe, but they're talking about more Europe politically. Now, whether in fact the euro is going to survive or not is debatable. In fact, the way it's going at the moment, it won't. And whatever will come afterwards, who knows? But it's going in a certain direction. It's going in a certain political direction. And in this article from yesterday, this is from Jeremy Warner of the business area of the Telegraph, it says, death of a currency as Eurogeddon approaches. It says, it's time to think what hitherto markets have regarded as the unthinkable, that the euro really is on its last legs, and the defining moment was the fiasco over Wednesday's Bund auction, reinforced yesterday by the spectacle of German sovereign bond yields rising above those of the UK. So basically they're putting out German sovereign bonds, in other words, bonds that the German government was just trying to go ahead and raise money on, and their rate of return was actually less than the rate of return on the UK, and at the same time, they weren't buying them. And the reason they weren't buying, it goes on, it says, the prevailing view it was that the German Chancellor didn't really mean what she was saying, or what she was only saying it to placate German voters. When finally she came to peer over the precipice, she'd retreat from a hardline position and compromise. Self-interest alone would force Germany to act. In other words, she's saying, no, Germany is not helping anymore. And she's saying, they've got to help, obviously. But it says, but there comes a point in every crisis where the consensus suddenly shatters, and that's what's just occurred. And with good reason. In recent days, it's become plain as a pikestaff that the lady's not for turning. And this has caused remaining international confidence in the euro to evaporate, and even German bonds to lose their risk-free status. The crisis is no longer confined to the sinners of the South. Suddenly, nobody wants to hold euro-dominated assets of any variety. And that includes what had previously been thought of the eurozone safe haven of German bonds. So, again, we're looking at something that's going to have to come out of what we see at the moment. And what's going to come out of it is eventually going to be the fact that no man is going to be able to buy or sell unless he's got the mark of the beast, unless the political union that is going to take place and the imposition from that political union is actually accepted. In this same vein, another one from today's paper, it says, prepare for riots. This is on page 12 of the Telegraph. Prepare for riots in euro collapse, Foreign Office tells the embassies. So this is going out to the British embassies at the moment within the European Union. It says, British embassies in the eurozone have been told to draw up plans to help British expatriates through the collapse of the single currency amid renewed fears of the Italy and Spain. As the Italian government struggled to borrow and Spain considered seeking an international bailout, and I believe the Italian rate of interest is now 8%. 7 is the cut-off point. It's now 8%. It says, British ministers privately warned that the breakup of the euro, once almost unthinkable, is now increasingly plausible. Diplomats are preparing to help Britons abroad through a banking collapse and even riots arising from the crisis. It goes on, it says that Foreign and Commonwealth Office instructions to embassies and consulates request contingency planning for a currency collapse that could leave Britons unable to access bank accounts or even withdraw cash and facing scenarios such as rioting and social unrest. So the entirety of Europe is likely to disintegrate into rioting and social unrest. When that happens, Then you see the emergence of a strongman, the emergence of some kind of political force. Now that force, that political force, is going to be led by a religious leader, as it says in here, the third point. If you go over to verse 11, it says, "And I beheld another beast coming up out of the earth." Now the first beast, obviously, you're looking at, it ends with Rome. It's Babylon, Medes and Persians, Greece and Rome. Now that Roman Empire finished, but it didn't finish, because the Holy Roman Empire then came out of its midst. "I beheld another beast coming up out of the earth, and had two horns like a lamb, and he spoke like a dragon." He spoke like Satan, but he gave the appearance of being a Christ-like individual. "And he exercised all the power of the first beasts before him," which you'll see throughout the Middle Ages, "and caused the earth and those that dwell therein to worship the first beast, whose deadly wound was healed." So they're actually accepting many of the things that came from Babylon, through Greece, and through Medes and Persians, through Greece, through Rome. "And he does great wonders." Now this we haven't seen yet, but we shall. "So that he makes fire come down from heaven on the earth in the sight of men, and deceives them that dwell on the earth by the means of those miracles which he had the power to do in the sight of the beast, saying to them that dwell on the earth that they should make an image to the beast which had the wound by a sword and did live." So this is in fact what is going to take place, that there is going to be a resurrected Holy Roman Empire. And it is interesting that this is an article from yesterday, "Germany Stands Firm" of the ECB. And it says, "French appeals for Germany to sanction extra powers for the European Central Bank have been firmly rejected, despite warnings from politicians, economists, and even the Vatican." So the warnings have actually come in from the Vatican already regarding Europe and the situation that we find in Europe today. It's interesting that when you go back to John Paul II, who presided over the fracturing of the what was once the communist bloc, and then European integration from the East and the West, so you get the 2 feet there. He was making a common statement over in Athens in 2001, with the Archbishop of Athens, and he says, "We rejoice at the success and progress of the European Union. The union of the European world is in one civil entity, without a people losing their national self-awareness, traditions and identity, has been the vision of its pioneers. However, the emerging tendency to transform certain European countries into secular states without any reference to religion constitutes a retraction and a denial of their spiritual legacy. We are called to intensify our efforts so that the unification of Europe may be accomplished. We shall do everything in our power so that the Christian roots of Europe and its Christian soul may be preserved inviolate." So that was the aim of the Catholic Church at that particular time. And Benedict, the present Pope, went ahead and made the following statement. This is July 2005, shortly after he came to power. Says, "I would like to do so by thinking back to the pilgrimage in 1982 of my beloved predecessor, John Paul II, to Santiago de Compostela, where he made the solemn declaration of you to Europe in November 1982. And he says, in which he spoke these memorable words of the greatest timelines, which I now repeat. Now, Saint Benedict, from which he got his name, Benedict the Pope, got his name from Saint Benedict, he is the patron saint of Europe. That is the patron saint of Europe. So there's a reason for these, you know, they don't choose their names arbitrarily. And he says, in which he spoke these memorable words of the greatest timelines, which I now repeat. And so he's now repeating them. He's now backing them up with a name that is the patron saint of Europe as well. He says, "I, Bishop of Rome and Shepherd of the Universal Church, from Santiago, utter to you, Europe of the ages, a cry full of love. Find yourself again, be yourself, discover your origins, revive your roots, return to those authentic values which made your history a glorious one, and your presence so beneficent of other continents." So that is the flavour that John Paul II left. And what we're looking at today, as far as Europe is concerned, is the same. Remember, Benedict chose his name as from the patron saint of Europe, and he's chosen his name that way. He is furthering that end. And when you fit it in with the mark of the beast, and you fit it in with the way in which the religious leader is going to lead at the end time, imposing the mark of the beast through the political union that is there, and it's going to have a particular emphasis on the monetary situation and on the trading situation. What we see in Europe today, it adds so much more to the sermon that we're about to hear today. I just finally read from the Vatican Insider from the 14th of November the visit that Van Rompuy, who is the president of the European Council, when he made a visit to the Pope. And it says, "We live in a time of crisis and Europe has big problems." These were the words spoken in French by Benedict as he sat next to the president of the European Council. So he is involved with this, and he had the president of the European Council come to see him. Herman Van Rompuy at the table at the Papal Library. His words reflected all the concern that the Pope has for the serious economic situation the continent is facing and the prospects for the EU. And this had to be one of the central themes of the meeting in the Vatican with Van Rompuy. So this was the reason for having the meeting, is because of the problems. And as we've seen, it's even from the Vatican, the call for Germany to assume their rightful role within Europe as far as the economic situation is concerned. It says, "The talks held in an atmosphere of cordiality," according to the note released by the Vatican Press Office, "made it possible to exchange views on the international situation and on the contribution that the Catholic Church wishes to offer the European Union." So that has already been discussed, and it's been discussed this month, a matter of a week or more ago. That's about a week ago that was discussed. "The dialogue also focused on the promotion of human rights and in particular religious freedom." So again, it is the religious freedom, and particularly the Catholic religious freedom within Europe, that is so vitally important. Finally, just let's read one scripture. Turn over a couple of pages to Revelation 20, and just remind ourselves of something. This subject of Mark of the Beast is important. In fact, it is vitally important. It is to do with the Sabbath day, which is the identification of the Creator to his people and his people to the Creator. And we see in verse 4... in verse 4 of Revelation 20, "And I saw thrones." This is the destination that we're looking for, the time to be teachers in the world tomorrow. "And I saw thrones, and they that sat upon them, and judgment was given to them. And I saw the souls of those that were beheaded for the witness of Jesus." And you can see that coming. And the guillotine almost certainly will be the execution method of choice, I would have thought. "And for the word of God, and which had not worshipped the beast," and I want you to notice this, this is the defining line, "that had not worshipped the beast, neither his image, neither had received a mark upon their foreheads or in their hands, and they lived and they reigned with Christ for 1,000 years. This, as it says, is the first resurrection. And it says, "Blessed and holy is he that has a part in the first resurrection. On such the second death has no power. But they shall be priests of God and of Christ." And notice what that... just notice how the mark of the beast and the rejection of that mark, the rejection of what the beast stands for, is bound into this. And it says, "They shall be priests of God and of Christ, and shall reign with him for 1,000 years.